All right, get ready, because today we're going deep on a legal case that seriously shaped the world around us. Imagine, no zoning laws. What would that even look like?
Well, you could have a factory right next door to your home.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that.
Or maybe a skyscraper blocking the sun from your favorite park. Total chaos, right?
Yikes.
Yeah, and that's exactly where Village of Euclid v. Ambler Realty Co. comes in.
Euclid v. Ambler. A classic.
A landmark case from 1926 that basically laid the groundwork for all modern zoning law here in the U.S.
And this isn't just some, you know, boring old legal precedent. This case still impacts every single town and city in America today.
Absolutely. And it all comes down to this fundamental question. Can the government actually tell you what you can and can't do with your own land?
A question for the ages.
And Euclid v. Ambler jumped right into that debate. To really understand how important this case is, though, we need to go back in time a bit.
Okay, let's time travel. Where are we going?
Back to the roaring 20s. Think about America, rapidly urbanizing, cities growing like crazy, industries booming, and people. So many people all flocking to these urban centers.
So we've got crowded tenements, sanitation problems, factories spewing smoke right next to where people are living. I can see where this is going.
Exactly. Public health, safety, even just basic quality of life. It was all at stake. So folks started looking for a solution.
And that's where zoning comes in, right?
Right. Zoning emerges as this tool, this way to bring some order to this chaotic urban landscape.
And that brings us to the small village of Euclid, Ohio.
Yep, just outside Cleveland. In 1922, they decide to do something bold.
Bold.
They passed a comprehensive zoning ordinance.
Hold on, break that down for me. What did that mean?
They divided the village into different districts, areas for houses, areas for businesses, areas for industry. They even set limits on building heights, you know, how tall buildings could be, how many people could live in a certain area.
So they were really trying to plan ahead, avoid that uncontrolled growth, huh?
Absolutely. They didn't want to become just another sprawling suburb of Cleveland. But then here comes Ambler Realty.
Uh-oh. Sounds like trouble brewing.
They owned a huge chunk of land in Euclid. We're talking 68 acres. Prime real estate.
Wow. 68 acres. And they wanted to do what with it?
Turn it into a big industrial zone. You know, factories, warehouses, the whole nine yards.
I bet they weren't happy when Euclid passed that zoning ordinance.
Not one bit. A good chunk of their land was now zoned residential, meaning they couldn't build all those factories.
So I'm guessing they didn't just take that lying down.
Nope. They did what any good American company would do. They sued.
It wouldn't be a major legal turning point in America without a lawsuit.
Right. You got that right. Ambler Realty claimed Euclid's zoning ordinance was stepping all over their property rights.
It's the classic battle. Individual rights versus the greater good.
Exactly. And this one, well, it made it all the way to the Supreme Court.
That's a long way from a small village in Ohio.
It is, but that's how big this issue was. And the Supreme Court, in a landmark decision, sided with Euclid. They said zoning as a concept was constitutional.
Wow. So this little village in Ohio changed the legal landscape for the entire country.
They did. And cities across America breathed a collective sigh of relief. Can you imagine if the court had ruled the other way?
I don't even want to think about it. So what was the reasoning behind the Supreme Court's decision? Why was zoning suddenly okay?
They recognized that while zoning might limit what you can do with your property, it serves a bigger purpose.
Protecting the public.
Exactly. Public health, safety, general welfare. It wasn't just about making cities look pretty. It was about making them livable.
And this brings us to Justice Sutherland's famous quote, right?
Oh, you mean the one about the pig?
The pig in the parlor.
That's the one. He wrote, "A nuisance may be merely a right thing in the wrong place, like a pig in the parlor instead of the barnyard."
Okay, I get it. A factory might be perfectly fine in an industrial zone, but put it in the middle of a neighborhood and suddenly it's a nuisance.
Right. So Ambler Realty had the right to use their land, sure, but that right had limits.
And that's where the rational basis test comes into play, right?
Mm.
If I remember correctly from law school, that basically means the law has to have some kind of a reasonable connection to a legitimate government interest.
You got it. Like protecting public health or safety. If there's that connection, the law is likely to be upheld. It doesn't mean the court agrees with every little detail of the zoning ordinance, just that there's a logic behind it.
So Euclid's ordinance, as long as it wasn't totally random or unfair, it passed the test.
Exactly. And this is huge. Euclid v. Ambler set a precedent that courts still use today to decide zoning cases.
So Euclid v. Ambler, it basically created zoning as we know it. But it's almost 100 years later, and we're still dealing with all the, you know, the complications, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. Euclid might have given us the framework, but it also opened up this whole can of worms. How do we balance individual property rights with what the community needs?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Because zoning, let's face it, it's not always a good thing. It can be used to exclude people, you know, make it harder for businesses to thrive. It can even hurt the environment.
You're hitting on some of the biggest criticisms of zoning. And you're right. Take affordable housing, for example. When you have strict rules about lot sizes, what kind of buildings can go where, how densely populated an area can be, well, that makes it really difficult to create affordable housing.
It's almost like, you know, wealthier neighborhoods can just keep out anything they don't want. Like, oh, no affordable housing here. Think of the property values.
That's a cynical take. But unfortunately, that kind of exclusionary zoning has been a reality in a lot of places. And that brings us to another important case. Southern Burlington County NAACP v. Township of Mount Laurel.
Mount Laurel. I vaguely remember that one from law school.
It's often just called the Mount Laurel case. From 1975. And it directly challenged the idea that towns could just zone out whatever they didn't like.
Oh, this is getting good. Tell me more.
So in the Mount Laurel case, the New Jersey Supreme Court said, nope, you can't use zoning to shut out low and moderate income housing. They basically said that towns have a responsibility to provide their fair share of affordable housing.
Wow. So it was like the legal system stepping in and saying, hey, you can't just create these islands of wealth and privilege while everyone else struggles to find a place to live.
You got it. It was a big deal, a groundbreaking decision. It forced communities to rethink how they were using zoning and acknowledge that different people have different needs.
But I bet it didn't go over well with everyone.
Well, you're right. It led to, you know, a ton of lawsuits. People were trying to figure out, okay, what exactly does fair share mean?
So Euclid v. Ambler said zoning was constitutional. But then Mount Laurel comes along and says, hold on, there are limits. You can't use it to be discriminatory.
Right. Mount Laurel was a turning point, showing that how we understand and apply zoning laws can change over time to try to address social and economic inequality.
That makes sense. So we talked about affordable housing. What about the environment? Does zoning have an impact on sustainability and protecting nature?
Oh, for sure. Zoning can be a powerful tool when it comes to environmental stuff. Think about it. You can use zoning to encourage denser development, so fewer people are driving everywhere.
And you can preserve open spaces, parks, things like that.
Right. You can protect sensitive ecosystems, even right. Help combat climate change by encouraging development in areas that don't require everyone to drive everywhere.
So instead of endless suburbs and traffic jams, we can create walkable, bikeable communities, right?
Yeah.
With parks, green spaces, public transportation.
Exactly. And zoning can also incentivize green building practices, you know, using environmentally friendly materials and techniques. But...
uh-oh, there's a but coming.
There's always a but with zoning. You see, it can also be used to block projects that are actually good for the environment. And that's where we run into NIMBYism.
Yes. NIMBYism. Not in my backyard. The classic case of supporting something in theory until it shows up on your street.
It's a tale as old as time, and it pops up all the time in zoning disputes. For instance, a community might be all for renewable energy, right? Solar panels, wind farms, the whole deal.
Sounds good so far.
But as soon as someone proposes a wind farm or a solar installation nearby, suddenly it's all not here. It'll ruin the views.
It'll lure my property values.
Exactly. And zoning regulations become the weapon of choice to keep these projects out.
So it sounds like zoning can be a bit of a two-faced friend when it comes to the environment. On one hand, it can help us create a more sustainable future. But on the other hand, it can be used to protect narrow interests, even if it means hurting the planet in the long run.
That's the dilemma. And it goes back to that fundamental tension. Individual property rights versus our responsibility to the community, to the environment, something we see popping up again and again in zoning's history.
So Euclid v. Ambler, it settled the big constitutional question. But in doing so, it sort of unleashed all these other questions, all these challenges that we're still figuring out today, almost 100 years later.
You're right. Euclid gave us the foundation, but it's these ongoing conversations about affordable housing, the environment, economic development, all of these things that force us to really think critically about zoning. How can we adapt it to deal with the realities of the 21st century?
Yeah, because what worked in 1926 or even in 1975 with Mount Laurel, well, it might not be the best solution for the problems we're facing now. It's a whole new world.
Exactly. Climate change, technology changing at warp speed, growing inequality, all of these things demand that we rethink how we do zoning.
Okay, so we've covered a ton of ground here. From Euclid v. Ambler and the very beginnings of zoning to affordable housing and protecting the environment. What's next? What does the future of zoning hold?
The million-dollar question. You know, I think the big takeaway from everything we've talked about is that zoning, it can't just stand still. It has to change, adapt to what communities need, what they value, and those things are always evolving.
Because what worked back in the 1920s with Euclid, even in the 70s with Mount Laurel, it might not be the right answer for the challenges we have now.
Right. Exactly. We've got climate change to worry about, technology changing everything so fast, and this growing awareness of just how unequal things are in so many communities. Zoning has to catch up to all of that.
Okay, so catch up how? What would a zoning system that's more responsive, more fair, what would that even look like?
Well, there's this trend that's gaining some traction, moving away from these super rigid zoning codes, you know, the one-size-fits-all kind of approach. Instead, people are looking at more flexible approaches, things that are specific to the context.
So instead of saying, you can only build this type of building here, you're saying, hey, what do we want this area to look like? The kind of feel do we want?
Yeah, like we want a walkable downtown area with shops and apartments mixed together. We want buildings that fit in with the historic architecture, stuff like that.
Sort of form-based zoning, is that what you're talking about?
That's it, form-based zoning.
Yeah.
It's less about what specific use a building has, more about the design, what it looks like, how it contributes to the overall character of the area.
I like that. It seems like it would address some of the issues we talked about earlier. More walkable neighborhoods, a wider range of housing options, all of that.
It is. It's about thinking differently. Instead of separation and exclusion, it's about integration, bringing things together, making sure everyone has a place.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
And what about sustainability? You mentioned earlier that zoning can be used to incentivize eco-friendly development.
Right. We talked about impact fees, but there are other ways to do it too. You can give density bonuses to developers who include green building features, or streamline the permitting process for renewable energy projects, make it easier for them to get approved. Some cities are even trying out these things called eco-districts.
Eco-districts, I like the sound of that.
It's where the zoning rules are all geared toward meeting specific sustainability goals for that district.
So zoning becomes less about just saying no, and more about actually encouraging, rewarding the kind of development we want to see. Stuff that aligns with our values, like protecting the environment, making housing affordable, being more socially equitable.
Exactly. And that, I think, is the heart of the Euclid v. Ambler legacy. It's not just about having the power to zone. It's about understanding that zoning can shape our communities in a really powerful way and using that power to make things better.
It's like we've come full circle, back to that original idea behind zoning, protecting the public welfare.
Yeah.
But now our understanding of what that means is much broader.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about health and safety anymore. It's about affordability, sustainability, social justice, all of these things.
Exactly. And it's a conversation everyone needs to be a part of. Residents, developers, policymakers, lawyers, all of us. Because at the end of the day, zoning is about deciding what kind of communities we want to live in. It's about creating places that are not just functional, but also equitable, vibrant places that can adapt and thrive in the face of challenges.
Well said. I have to say, this deep dive has been eye-opening. I've got a whole new appreciation for zoning law, for how complex and impactful it really is.
Me too. And remember, the next time you're out walking around your neighborhood, just take a look around. Think about all the zoning decisions that went into creating that landscape, that environment. It's all around us, shaping our lives in so many ways.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us for this fascinating deep dive into the world of zoning. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp, and remember, knowledge is power.